Welcome to Beyond the Crops, the podcast where we share the real and raw behind the scenes of conventional farming and what it's like to raise a family on America's backroads. I'm Jenna.
And I'm NP. In this episode, I'm interviewing Jenna on the origin story of her small business, Double O Beef. I'm super excited for this episode.
Me too.
So what you might not know about both of us is beyond being farm wives, crop farmer wives, both of us are small business owners ourselves. And we share about our small businesses on our social channels. We thought it would be a great idea for podcast episodes on our origin stories for our small businesses. And hopefully those of you listening can find some inspiration through our stories. Maybe you're on a small business journey yourself, and hopefully this our stories will help inspire you. So Jenna, why don't you start off by just telling us about your business? What is it?
So it's called Double O Beef. It's a kind of a spinoff of our farm. My husband's a fifth generation farmer, and the family farm is called Double O Farm. So when we started this separate entity, we kind of wanted to keep that same brand because it's very much just all encompassing. Like, we grow crops, we raise cattle, and now we sell beef. So we just kind of wanted to keep it the same sort of brand. But so we sell direct to consumer beef. We've always raised our own beef. I use Lightly. I married my husband almost 8 years ago. They've been raising beef for generations. So I just kind of came into the picture when we got married. Anyways, they've always raised beef for themselves and local friends and families by like the whole or half. We always gift our landlords part of a beef as well. So my husband's family's always had cattle and they've raised beef locally. When we first got married, went back to nursing school and then had an off-the-farm job as a labor and delivery nurse. And I was in a good routine with working three nights a week. And with Stetson was, 2 years old, and he was a good sleeper. We just had a really great routine. And I was kind of bored, to be honest, which, like, looking back, I'm laughing like, lady, why did you think you were bored? Anyways, Levi would want me to help on the farm and I would do things that he needed, but I kept saying, this is great, honey, but what I'm doing isn't generating more income. And I feel like my time could be used more wisely, to where if I am helping on the farm in some aspect, we should be using my time to generate more income, diversify ourselves a little bit more. And that's kind of where the idea for Double O Beef was born, because we've always, like I said, raised beef for ourselves, for friends and family, but we were like, there has to be a way to get our beef to people all across the country. That kind of came from the idea that I have a huge family and I have aunts and uncles and cousins, and even like one of my brothers lives out of state. So I have all of these connections, and I said, they would love our beef. How can we get our beef to them? So that's where the direct-to-consumer idea came from. And then I kind of dove deep into this huge thing I thought I knew everything about and I actually knew nothing about. So that's where Double O Beef was born. We raise birth to butcher, raise the beef on our farm, and they spend their whole lives on pasture. And then we finish them on a ration of like alfalfa, grass hay, corn. It's like a ration that we've worked with a nutritionist to kind of develop over the generations to produce a really unique and high quality flavor. And then it's processed at a USDA facility, and then we can sell it by the cut and by the pound of hamburger, if you will, and I can ship it to all 50 states.
That's crazy. So when you decided that this is actually more than friends and family, landlords, did you guys add cattle to increase production, or how did that look?
No, we didn't. We did not increase our herd size. And we don't even use all of our cattle for butcher. I think that would be Levi's goal, that maybe one day all of our calves are used for butcher, but we'd have to grow our beef business quite a bit and it would be a lot of work on my end. I feel like we're kind of at a good place right now. So I don't know if I want to do that quite yet.
So do the rest of them go to a packer, or where do they go?
So no, they don't go to a packer. We are a cow-calf operation. And so when we'll sell the calves that we aren't keeping back for our beef program, and we'll just sell them at the local sale barn that's really close to our summer pasture. And from there, they would go to a feedlot. So there's cattle buyers at that auction, and it's cattle buyers for feedlots usually that are buying our calves, because they would not be ready to butcher at that time. They'd go to be backgrounded or something before they're finished, and then they'd get sold to a packer.
So what we don't work directly with a packer. Okay. So what percentage would you say you guys are keeping back for a double O beef?
We're probably at about a third of our operation right now. I know it's like taboo in the cattle world to like say how many cows you have. We really have no problem talking about it. You can look on my social media. I've talked about it. We calve out about 130 to 150 cows every year, and we're processing probably 50 to 60 a year right now.
Okay. That's a good chunk though. I mean, if you think about the boxes that you're shipping out and it being a very small portion of an animal, like that's a lot for you to be shipping out.
Yeah, it is. And it's literally me and Levi. And then sometimes our family or friends will help during the big Christmas rushes. That's where honestly, we do a lot of our shipping around the holidays. But yeah, it's just us. So that's why I said I'm okay with not doing the entire herd, even though in theory, it would cash flow better if all of the cattle were going to beef. So that would be Levi's goal. But I don't know with three small kids if that's, I'm setting a boundary there, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And there's a tipping point too, where you're like, when do I hire help? When does it make sense to be hiring help? And do I want to manage a person or do I want to keep it at this manageable place where I can handle it?
Right.
It's kind of a weird place to be, but okay. So how did you go from local to then shipping across the U.S.? Like that's a huge thing. You're shipping like meat. It's not.
Yeah, it is a huge book. Thing. So I started researching and I was like, oh, this will be easy. We'll need boxes. We'll need some sort of insulation. We'll need dry ice. We ship it, like, end of story. It's way more complicated than that. I'm like laughing. I can picture that version of myself doing the research on my college laptop that didn't even work. I built our whole website on this laptop that had all the viruses and was so slow. But I guess that's just proof. Like if you have the passion, you can make it work with whatever tools you have. I've since upgraded that's my awesome. Laptop. I'll help you know. But I was deep diving and I was almost like paralyzed with information. I had all these different box sizes, there's all these different insulated liner options out there. I was just paralyzed myself with all this information about shipping perishables. And then this was the very first time I kind of took a leap of faith and invested in my business before I even had any income. But there was, my friend had actually seen this, had followed Five Marys on Instagram. And she said, Jenna, you guys were talking about shipping beef. I follow this lady. She is shipping beef. You should look her up. And so I looked her up and it was very serendipitous timing because at that time she had just announced that she was hosting a workshop for women in agriculture to learn how to ship perishables. And so it was like crazy meant to be timing. I told Levi about it. It was a big investment, but he was like, yeah, you have to do it, Jenna. If you don't go, somebody else is going to go and somebody else is going to do it. So you might as well spend the money and learn from somebody that's kind of navigated ahead of you. And then we can just go deep dive into this business. So that's what I did. I went to her retreat in Northern California. I learned all about shipping perishables. I met the most incredible women. A handful of them are still some of my very best friends and we keep in touch and we still get together. It was like very meant to be. But I learned so much at that retreat. And that's when I made the realization that you can't, like, for lack of a better word, half-ass ship beef. Like you're either all in or not. Like you can't just sort of ship here and there. You have to invest in the shipping supplies and just make it work because you have to. You can't just, oh, I'm going to ship a box or two this week. Maybe next week I'll ship a couple more. Like at that point, that's when I realized like I had to commit and buy the things or this business was never going to work.
So when you went to that course, did you feel like I'm ready to do this or were you more overwhelmed leaving there? Because that sounds kind of overwhelming.
It was overwhelming. I was a little bit overwhelmed leaving there, but I also felt very prepared. I had good ideas, a good list of things I needed to get started on. And I had just met a bunch of women that were about to navigate the same thing. And so then it was a good community that was formed and we kind of still bounce ideas off of each other, still talk to each other about how our businesses are doing, how can we improve our businesses, still share wins with each other. So overwhelmed, yes, but more prepared to handle that. It was definitely a wise investment.
Good. And I guess like what I love about that community that you're talking about is you guys literally technically are competitors in your market. Mm-hmm. But what you realize like when you're starting a small business in agriculture is, yes, you may have a similar product to someone else, but the amount of people there are to market that to, like, you guys will never run out of opportunity for customers. So supporting each other gets you so much further.
I've never seen other people that ship their homegrown products as a competitor, because I can't feed everybody. I cannot provide enough. Right. I cannot provide enough beef to feed everybody. Nobody can. So we're kind of all in this together, and we all kind of have to link arms and get the word out there that direct to consumer is an option. And yes, there is still a lot of people that don't even realize that they can buy it straight from a farmer. So I've always been of the mindset that it's community over competition for sure.
Okay. So tell me about, I think what I've noticed, if you guys have kind of like changed the products that you offer your customers. So what are kind of some of the different things that you offer?
So I started super simple. I was like, we're going to do the basic steaks. We're going to do ground beef. We did do burger patties right out of the gate because that is something we knew we wanted to do, but we kept it simple. Then 2020 hit and the world got nutso, and finding a local, because these USDA processors that we have to use are usually small mom and pop shops, and they all of a sudden were super busy because now all of a sudden everybody wanted to buy beef from a farmer and it was impossible to get butcher dates. So then we kind of had to get creative. I had to go through several different processors. Finally, there's a new rancher-owned processing facility just 30 minutes from us that we're building a relationship with. And through that, I guess I sold out in 2020 and I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. This wasn't even hard. I sold all my steaks. I sold all my ground beef, all my roasts. Like, now we're just waiting on processing dates. We were in a great position. Well, when we finally kind of caught up with the market and we had more meat and more dates and we could process more cattle, now I had an excess of ground beef and roast. It's just, it's like, it's going to happen. There's people want the high quality steaks, and the average American keeps 1 to 2 pounds of ground beef in their freezer, if any at all. Sometimes they just buy it from the grocery store when they need it. Us being rural women, that's hard for us to grasp because we've always had like 100 plus pounds of ground beef in our freezer. And now I had all of this ground beef that I wasn't getting through, but I could sell steaks all day long. So that's when we started getting creative with our specialty products. The first one being our Backroads Beef Brat, which is Levi's homemade recipe. It's kind of his passion project. Levi, we've talked about how Levi's kind of a food snob and he's very particular about where his food comes from and the quality of it. That being said, he has a pet peeve with hot dogs. He's not about them. He doesn't want our kids to eat them. He doesn't eat them. He thinks they're disgusting. So he took on this passion project to create a beef brat that is flavorful enough that adults like it, but not too spicy or weird in a flavor that kids wouldn't like it. So he wanted like a very family-friendly beef brat to replace the hot dogs in our home, because I kind of like myself a good grilled hot dog on the 4th of July. I'm not going to lie. And so that's where this recipe was born. He did it himself. We process our own hogs every winter. That's a whole nother story. His family's been doing that since they immigrated here in the 1800s. So when we do hog butcher, Levi would actually thaw out all of our roasts because he did not have an affinity for beef roast, which is crazy to me. Like, farm boy, wouldn't you love a good Sunday afternoon beef roast? Not Levi. So he thawed out all of our roasts and he grind them into beef brats. And he kind of fine-tuned the recipe over 5-6 years. And now it's this really incredible product, if I do say so myself. And we found it took 2 years to find a processor that would use our recipe, because a lot of processors just want to use their own recipes. But we finally found somebody that would use our recipe so that it was our beef and our recipe, just good, clean ingredients. It's literally just like seasonings, beef, and pork fat. And so it's so good. So good.
We've had
so them. So that was kind of, thank you very much.
Yes.
we kind of had a consistency issue with, they made our brats, but they weren't consistent. And I don't even know if I've told you this, Mary Pat, but we had a batch, a 600 pound batch, that just wasn't that good. And we knew that we couldn't sell it. And so we donated it to a church.
Well, hey, at least it didn't go to waste. I mean, that's a huge cut for you guys to take as a business owner.
Huge. But I was sick over it. But Levi and I both knew Like we had other beef producers buying these beef brats from us because it's they can get their own steaks and hamburger, but they couldn't get this yep. homemade product that we had developed ourselves. And so I was unwilling to be like, hey, we're a small business. Just bear with us. We know these aren't as good, but keep buying them. They'll get better next round. Like you can't do that. That was like business no. suicide. So Levi was like, Jenna, I've been praying about it. Let's just donate it to your dad's church. They always do big events. They feed a lot of people. They'll be appreciative of it. And I was like, you know what? I feel good about that. It was a several thousand dollar loss to our yes. business, but at least we weren't going to lose those beef brat customers. So now our new processor is starting to do specialty products. They just did a test batch of our brats and they were phenomenal. And so Ooh. Now we're working with them to make sure that it's consistent. And I haven't told anybody this. Well, we're adding a cheddar brat. So it's our same.
Yay, cheese.
I'm excited for that.
I know.
So it's our same awesome recipe. We just added cheddar cheese to it and they're so good.
When can I get my hands on some of these, Jenna?
So probably in June.
Okay. Tell me. I want to be
Maybe
your first
by
order.
By the time this episode airs, we might have it. I just have a test batch and so they're not labeled cheddar brat. So I didn't want to sell them because I didn't want people to think, because I have had people say, are they dairy free? And our original brats are dairy free, gluten free, all the things. It's literally meat and seasoning. Yeah. And so I just wanted it to be very clear that there was cheese in them. So we have to work on that label before I sell them.
Well, that's great because there's so many people looking for, I mean, I'm talking about your original brat. Like there's so mm-hmm. many people looking for something clean like that. I mean, clean. I hate that word when it comes to food because all food is safe and whatever, you know, but there are people with dietary restrictions and there's in normal mm-hmm. brats or hot dogs, there's so much other stuff that people can't have. So Mm-hmm. What an incredible product for people with that need that too.
Yeah. And I agree all food is safe, but I do believe that some food is better than others and that food is medicine and we need to be mindful of what we put in our bodies. And so we have been very picky about the ingredients that are in our specialty products. Like Levi he's allergic to MSG. He gets heart palpitations from it. It makes him feel not good. And so like most teriyaki flavorings have MSG in it. So we'll probably never have a teriyaki beef jerky because if it's not something we're willing to eat, I don't want to sell it. So we have been mm-hmm. very picky about the ingredients that we use in our specialty products. So we have our beef brats, we have summer sausage, pepper jack summer sausage. And then I still had all this ground beef. We could only do so many brats. I wanted a shelf stable product too, because now the biggest limiting factor in my business was freezer space. And so right. I wanted some shelf stable products where I could process some beef that I didn't have to freeze. And so we have 5 flavors of beef jerky. And we had this last holiday season, we had a beef snack stick that went over very well. I'm completely sold out of it, which makes me sad. I literally bought some Chomp snack sticks from Thrive because I was out of our own, but I needed some beef sticks. But they're coming soon. A restock is coming soon, I promise.
Well, we'll have to do restock updates on the podcast for everyone listening because I yes. feel like this episode is going to hype people up, especially with summer grilling season coming. Like, we need Heck to get a yes. restock.
I
Good
know.
Good steaks and brats and all of the
We
things.
Have a burgers and brats box. It's just 5 pounds of pre-pattied burgers and then 5 pounds of our beef brats. And I almost restocked it the other day, but I was like, no, the label's not right. I could sell them and give a disclaimer, but I should just wait. So
do you like buy new labels for them and put them on, or how does that work?
No, we have like a state. Well, in the past, my Backroads beef brats had a picture of in the background of the road that leads to our summer pasture. It's so pretty. It's like the ultimate Backroads.
I love that.
But those are at our old specialty processor and I don't have those at our new processor. So I need to have Backroads cheddar brats put on a batch.
Do you print your own labels or does the processor print them?
No, so I buy them from a third party and it's like that third party works with the processor and their label machine, is the labels that I buy fit with the label machine that the processor has, because in order for it to be processed USDA and leave their facility, it has to have like their USDA bug that each processor has, it has to have safe handling instructions, the ingredients and like the name of the product. So we don't label it ourselves. It has to be labeled under inspection of a USDA inspector.
So can you talk about why that is? Like, why do you have to have it? Oh, and I guess what's the difference? Like, I didn't know. Are there processors that are just like private processors. So like you, mm-hmm. they would not be for resale. Is that what that means? Or
right. So it'd be, that's called custom exempt. So if like your family processes a whole beef, the beef that you get back probably says not for resale, processed mm-hmm. for Mary Pat Sass or whatever.
Okay.
So when you do that, like you're taking ownership of the animal on the hoof. So say you bought a whole beef from me, like you're taking ownership on the hoof. You're saying that live animal is mine. I'm buying it from Jenna. Process it for me according to my instructions. That's when it says not for resale. And those are all processors are inspected. It's just the custom exempt processors don't have a USDA inspector on site at all times. So it's just for food safety reasons. So when you buy that animal, you're kind of saying, I'm taking responsibility for it. I understand how to handle the meat. Like you don't need to print all that on there. Just it's kind of more of a wholesale option, if you will, to get that whole animal. In order for me to sell it to individuals by the cut, like I'm selling them the already processed cuts and pieces of meat, that has to be their inspector has to see the animal live. They have to witness the harvest. They have to inspect the carcass, and then they have to be there when it's being fabricated and then when it's being labeled as well. So those USDA facilities have an inspector there 5 days. Like if they're open, the inspector's there.
Okay. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. And I mean, I guess it makes sense then. So when you're buying a quarter or a half, you're buying the live animal technically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. If it's at a custom exempt processor, like I do have some people that'll buy a quarter. I actually don't sell quarters, custom quarters. I'll do custom halves or wholes. And it still goes through my same USDA processor because that's who I have the relationship and dates with. But technically that could go to a different processor.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so let's talk. Mm-hmm. I just want to ask a few more questions because I've heard some of your origin story, but what's like in your mind when you think about the journey of Double O Beef, what is one of the biggest obstacles you overcame? I know you talked about the beef brats and having to donate that, but is there any other experiences that kind of stick out in your mind?
I would say freezer space was huge because we started, get this, we started borrowing 2 freezers from Levi's cousin's friend. They were in, oh my gosh. So Levi's cousin has a business called Ely Asparagus and they have pickled asparagus. That's a great product. You should look farm product. It was his high school FFA project. He applied for this grant with a local pumpkin farmer. And then they put up this building and got these freezers together. And the pumpkin farmer would only use those freezers in the fall to flash freeze pumpkin puree. So they were empty most of the year. We're at Easter. We're about to a family Easter that's at the asparagus building, and we're about to process our first beef, but we don't really have a space for them. And we're like, hey, Neil, are those freezers empty? Yeah, but they're not mine, yada, yada. So we make this connection. The guy lets us borrow his freezers. We get to where he's going to need them again. He actually decides he's not going to do the pumpkin stuff. So he sells those to us. So now we have 2 commercial freezers, which was awesome, but we could only hold like 3 full beef at a time.
Okay.
And if we wanted to process more at a time, like freezer space has always been our limiting factor. Like I felt like we'd finally make some money. Oh, we need to buy another freezer. Finally make some money. Oh, we need to buy another freezer. Now we did buy a walk-in and that has been huge because now that, I mean, our walk-in's been pretty close to full. So we still get that stress sometimes of we need more freezer space. But that takes a lot of the stress off of it because before we had the walk-in, we were having to like rearrange the meat every time we got more animals. So like the newer meat was in the front and it was just a process. Now we can just somebody can pick it up, throw it in our walk-in, and I can sort it when I get time for it.
Okay.
So that was a huge setback. And then once we got that, that's been a huge stress relief.
When did you get the walk-in?
Oh, we got it last summer. It's been about a year. It was used. Levi found it on like the Facebook marketplace.
Mm-hmm. If it works.
It works. It does work. Thank goodness. But also we were using, before we found our new local processor, we were using one over 2 hours away. And then to transport the meat in the 90-degree heat of the summer was so stressful and terrible. So that was another big obstacle. We were all honestly to the point, like if we can't find somebody closer, this isn't worth it anymore.
Yeah. That is, I mean, it's a huge risk if you're trying to move it in the summer. I get that. Yikes.
So Levi, this is so redneck, but it's on brand for us. We had 2 broken deep freezes that he would put in the back of his pickup. And then they'd go to the processor and put the frozen meat into these broken freezers because they still have all that insulation. And then he'd bring it home and then we'd get it out of the freezers. It was such a pain, but I mean, growing pains of a small business, I guess.
Yes, you do whatever you can to make it happen.
Yes. Precision Planting has a really cool motto or tagline, if you will, believe in better. We're proud to be partnered with Precision Planting because not only do they believe in the future of farming, but they also believe in and support the women in agriculture. They believed in us in this podcast before it even launched, and we are so grateful to be aligned with a company that is true to our values.
What does it mean to believe in better? Believing in better is a mindset to pursue excellence in everything you do. It's welcoming opportunities to improve your farm and knowing that your best season is simply a starting point for this season. Precision Planting is for farmers like you who believe in better. Thank you so much to Precision Planting for being our launch sponsor. Okay, so how is your business different today than when you started? We might have talked a little bit about this, but is there anything else you would add?
So I started simple, and I would say anybody that's interested in selling direct to consumer, keep it simple. Like I did T-bones, New York strips, fillets, sirloins, like all the simple steaks. I've since learned a lot more about the carcass and about the animal and how to utilize more tip to tail and utilizing everything that the animal has to offer. And I learned about that by going to the processor when our beef was being processed. Most butchers would love to have you there. Our one now, he was like, Jenna and Levi, you need to get here because there, like every time something comes back, there might be something that wasn't quite right. And he's like, you just need to come be in the fab room with us. Tell us exactly what you want. I'll show you what's happening on our end. And then I can even give you ideas of other cuts to try. So I feel like I started simple because that's what I could handle in that moment in time. But as I got more comfortable with the business and with beef and animals, there was so much I didn't know about a beef carcass, and I've learned so much. And that's kind of what's helped us add to our product line and kind of expand in that way. So I'd say it's different in that I just grew when I was ready, felt like I could handle more, I guess.
Okay. So that leads me into a question I thought of while you were talking. Like, what is one piece of advice you have for someone? You could get as specific as starting a direct-to-consumer beef business or just someone who's starting their own small business in general. What's some advice you have?
Okay. My biggest piece of advice is to, like, a business is hard to start. It's going to be overwhelming, but you have to dive in like while that fire is burning, while that passion is there, because there will never be the perfect moment. There will never be okay, I'm finally ready. Now I'll start the business. Like looking back, if I wouldn't have dove in when I thought I was bored and thought we needed to diversify our farm, and if I would have waited, we would have gotten pregnant and had another kid. It never would have happened. So diving in while the fire was hot was definitely my best piece of advice. Cause like I said, we kind of told some friends about our idea. The next week she's like, check out this farm on Instagram. And then 2 weeks after we even spoke about this idea, I had signed up for this retreat. So it happened so fast, but I'm looking back, I feel like diving in when that fire was hot was the best thing we could have done.
That is some solid advice. Don't wait till it's perfect or you'll never start.
It will never. It's still not perfect. We still have growing pains. We still have things. We actually had never had issues with our walk-in or really any of our freezers. We went to Colorado last fall. Levi went elk hunting and we saw some friends. Actually, one of the friends that I met at that initial retreat, now she sends us her cow herd on corn stalks, and we went elk hunting at their ranch, and just really cool relationships came from that. Anyways, we get back from Colorado and Levi just randomly goes into the beef garage and the walk-in was at 45 degrees. Oh, had never happened before. We had never had any issues with it. Of course, we leave for 5 days and something happens. Now I have sensors in all of my freezers that are connected to a hub in my house that will give me a notification on my phone if my freezer is too low
or my too high. Goodness. That is crazy.
So there's always something. I mean, it's always a risk when you're dealing with a perishable product. Like I could get a tornado hit my yard and all my freezers are broken and all my meat's gone. Like that's definitely a risk. But Well, I guess what I was getting at is there's never a perfect time. There's always growing pains. I still don't have a garage to park my vehicle in because I gave it up to do this beef business out of. All of our stuff is out of the garage. So,
oh man, I'm going to make Josh listen to this episode because he will be like, we have the same wife. She takes my garage space.
It was Levi's idea. He's like, why would we build a garage? It doesn't cash flow.
It's true. Oh, I was going to ask if you guys have like a farm generator for if there were to ever, you were to ever lose power or anything.
So yes and no. There used to be really big generators here because Levi's high school FFA project was, there was an old pig barn on the farm. We live on the original homestead and Levi's grandpa was in the hogs in the 80s. Well, that kind of flopped and the hog market crashed. So he got out of the hog business. And so there was this old hog barn sitting there. And in high school, Levi raised trout. So he had like big, I don't even know how it works. I never saw it, but he raised trout out of this old hog barn and they had generators for that because if it froze or something, like obviously you had to keep the water warm enough for the trout so they weren't going to freeze, but
yeah.
So they had those generators. They turned the barns that the trout were in were going to need a lot of work. So Levi decided he wanted to focus on cattle, tore all that out, turned that old building into our now calving barn. And so the generator where it hooks up kind of got lost in translation. We can like shut the power off to the yard, hook up a tractor and kind of backfeed a PTO to run the yard if we need to. But we don't have like a big fancy generator. We've done it once in a storm, but honestly, Levi doesn't even care about keeping the house going. It's more keeping the cattle waters
going. 100%. That's exactly how my dad was. It was always like, do the cows have water? That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is there anything else that you missed or that you'd like to add about this origin story?
I guess so. I never really saw myself as an entrepreneur. I thought I would be a small business owner. I actually had really big city dreams. I thought I'd go to medical school and like live in New York or Boston or something. But God just has a funny way of humbling us sometimes because now I live in this town that has a population of like 40 people. And I never thought I'd be a nurse either. But when I married Levi before I even graduated from my undergrad, I graduated with a degree in nutrition and exercise science. So we got married. And then I graduated the next year. I was already pregnant with Stetson. So obviously I wasn't going to go back to a big four-year terminal degree or anything. So that's where I kind of pivoted my career and went and did an accelerated nursing program. So I have two bachelor's degrees. I don't know if I necessarily recommend that path, but if I would have known I was going to be a nurse, I would have obviously done it different from the get-go. But it all happens how it's supposed to. And then I started working as a labor and delivery nurse, and I loved it. Like loved, loved, loved my job, loved the people I work with. It was very rewarding. And I honestly saw myself working full-time indefinitely, at least for 20 plus years. I don't know. And then the roles on our farm just kind of shifted, and Levi kind of needed me to be more present. And so within the last 18 months, stepped away, and I'm PRN at that job now. So I guess where I'm going with this is you kind of just have to like be okay with rolling with your journey wherever it takes you, because I never thought I would own a small business, never thought I would give up my full-time career, never thought I would be self-employed, if you will.
Do you feel like this is where you're meant to be right now? Like, do you feel like, I know that you think back to all the time that you invested in your education and like, but do you feel like this is right? This is where God has meant for you to be?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe I had that realization long before I did. He had actually been asking me to cut back at work or go part-time or something for well over a year before I even went part-time. And then I was part-time for a while. And then I went PRN as our responsibilities on the farm became more. And then once I stepped back, it became abundantly clear to me that that was where I was supposed to be. I didn't realize me working full-time night shift, I didn't realize how hard that was on my family until I was home more and kind of saw the transition happen. And then I almost felt guilty that I had stayed full-time for so long, because I feel like Levi was silently begging me like, we need help here, but also trying to respect the fact that I liked my career and didn't want to like take that from me. And he didn't take it from me. Like, I came to it on my own terms. And now we've just, it's been fun to kind of build this side business together and do it with our kids. Like the kids love helping us build boxes. And sometimes it gets a little stressful when you're trying to ship meat and you have little kids with you, but it's good for them to experience and see. And it's definitely where I'm meant to be, for sure.
I love that so much. It's funny how much we can plan our lives and think we have the perfect plan. And then God steps in and says, nope, this is where you're meant to be. And it's a whole different feeling in your heart when you're where you're meant to be.
Oh, for sure. And I loved being a labor nurse. I have such great memories. Some of my very best friends I worked with, that was the hard part. Like, I loved everybody I worked with. So I bawled a lot of tears before talking to my boss and my coworkers and making that transition. It was a very hard decision. And another thing I never expected, I started sharing on social media with the sole purpose of, I'm going to start this beef business. People aren't going to buy beef from a random stranger. Like, I'm going to have to build a community. They need to know where their meat's coming from. Like, you can buy good meat a lot of places. It's not that we have the best meat in the world. We think it's really good. But you can get great beef from a lot of different ranchers. But it's like our customers are buying our meat because, like, they're a part of our story. They've become a part of our community. They've seen how it's grown, where it's raised, and that aligns with their values. And so that's why they're our customers. And so that's why I started sharing on social media. And then it kind of just grew into building a bigger community than I ever expected and grew into monetizing it in other ways that I had no idea was even possible. So I've always kind of joked I'm like an accidental influencer because that was never, never my goal.
Well, that's a good accident. It's another source of income to positively impact your family and your farm.
And so this is funny, especially now that you and I have a podcast, because you were one of like my OG farm wife friends. But when I started sharing on social media, I was even like very picky about which other farmers I would follow back because I was like, I don't need to reach other people in agriculture. I need to reach people outside of agriculture. And so that was another way I was humbled, where it's like, there's this incredible community and there's so much to be learned from farmers in different areas and community to be formed there. It's not just about reaching people outside of agriculture. That's still a goal. Like, I want to share our story. We're less than 2% of the population, and the other 98% needs to know where their food comes from and know how it's raised and know that farmers aren't scary and farmers aren't trying to ruin the soil and all of these myths that you hear in the media about farmers. But there was just so much value in that community of other rural Americans that I had no idea was even out there when I started sharing.
I agree. Totally. And it's super helpful to learn from other farmers and their experiences. And yeah, I feel like there's pluses and minuses to social media, but for the most part, I've seen the pluses, especially in relationships like this.
Agreed.
With you and
yes.
Getting to connect with people across the country.
And I just want to go off of that a little bit more. And I then invested in another retreat. I went to Rural Rooted and I learned more about monetizing on social media and how to make that like just another diversified arm of our operation. And that the income from that was honestly what gave me the peace to step back from my full-time income, because that was like nurses in Nebraska don't make great money, but it was at least somewhat something we could rely on, and it was providing our health insurance, and I was unwilling to give that up. But then once I saw the opportunity that I had sharing on social media and partnering with brands that way and that income, that's what gave me the peace, like, okay, I can step away from this because there's other ways to provide for my family.
I love that. It's definitely going about like looking for opportunities and taking them when you can. And for sure, I love that you were able to monetize different parts of it, because it is tough. Like, I'm sure the dollars you make selling beef, that is tough money, and it's a long process to get that.
Mm-hmm. We honestly haven't paid ourselves from the beef business yet. I'll be totally transparent. It's just been like investing back into it, creating those new products, getting our infrastructure to a place where it is stable. But I feel like we're on the brink of being able to pay ourselves from that, which is rewarding.
That's so important for people to realize when they're starting a new business.
Yeah.
It is.
Uh-huh.
It's not you're going to be making money right away by any means.
Right. No. And two, I knew with my full-time job, like the beef business was we were so busy. I was working full-time. We had our second kid, Crawford. Levi was getting more responsibilities on the farm. Our farm was growing. It's like that was the first thing to get put on the back burner because that isn't what was providing for our family. And so we were both kind of the aspect, we either need to let this go or we have to make time somewhere else so we can actually invest into that business to see if it can cash flow for us, because we haven't really honestly given it a fair chance because it kept getting put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you feel like you're in a place now where it's like, this is something you're going to keep rolling with and it's going to keep going forward? How are you feeling about it?
I do. I feel like I go back and forth because I'm in the trenches with small children. And so sometimes the thought of shipping boxes sounds exhausting, but it has been rewarding. And we've kind of started to pour in more time in locally and selling beef more locally and like finding avenues for our shelf stable products and our specialty products, because all grocery stores sell ground beef. I can't rival a margin of a grocery store. Usually what grocery stores sell ground beef for is under what my break even is. So that doesn't make sense, but we can still get into those markets by utilizing our specialty products. So I think pumping more volume that direction and then still selling steaks nationwide has been like figuring out where the meat's going to, what meat's going to sell best where has given me more hope and drive. And Levi is still full forced, excited about these beef brats and making those a big thing somehow, whatever that may be in the future.
I'm excited for that for you guys.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the 00 Beef origin story and learned a little bit more about me and how I got to where I am at today. If you'd like to try some of our premium homegrown dry aged beef, just head on over to 00farms.com and hit the buy our beef button. Use discount code Beyond the Crops for 10% off your next order. Thanks so much for tuning in.